You're listening to Podcast 1505, recorded January 31st, 2015. It's time for another Internet Advisor Show podcast. Since 1998, we've been helping computer users get on the Internet, get around it, and get over the problems they encounter there. The Internet Advisor is a two-hour weekly radio program heard on WJR 760 AM in Detroit since 1998 and across the state of Michigan on the Michigan Talk Network. Now, here are your hosts with this week's Internet Advisor Podcast.
Welcome to the Internet Advisor, your place for answers to your computer questions since 1998, with your co-hosts Gary Baker and Foster Brown and their team of tech experts. The door is always open at InternetAdvisor.net, on Facebook, and through Twitter. But right now it's time to get you in touch with your helpful hosts on this week's edition of Internet Advisor.
Welcome aboard the 17th anniversary edition of the Internet Advisor. I'm Foster Brown, the co-host of the program and one of the founders along with Gary Baker. We've got a studio full of a lot of fun here. We're going to be going to the frozen north and talk with Charlie Hopper at pasty.net. We'll be talking about a new invention coming out of Detroit called... It's called Hemming Right. It's a unique thing. Rick Bright in studio with us, and even Mike Brennan from MI Tech News. All that in the first hour. It's a little bit like juggling grenades, keeping track of everybody who's here in the studio. Hi, I'm Foster Brown, and it's a very special time for us because everybody kind of scratches their head and says, really? Gary Baker? It was 17 years ago, roughly, about this time, that you and I began the Internet Advisor.
That's right. It's amazing they've let us stay on this long.
It is remarkable for any radio program to have existed this long. Terrestrial radio, of course, with the challenges now coming from the Internet, it's even a bigger challenge, but here we are.
Well, we've melded the Internet Advisor radio show with real radio and the real Internet. And
that's right.
Maybe that's the key.
And I guess wonderful news this week was the folks at Visual Compass, and we had Vince Schmielewski with us in just a little bit, and helped us to get our iTunes feed fixed, and we are now, you can get us every week if you subscribe to us through iTunes, and that's so
that's
nice.
That's right, and you can also go to internetadvisor.net, and by the way, you'll see the cake. You'll see the cake up there.
A little piece of virtual cake.
We always have cake for our anniversaries and our birthdays, and regular listeners know that, and they're ready for, I'm sure, virtual cake today. So
that's right. All right, and let me introduce the other people in studio here. Ed Rudell. Eddie, good to have you here.
Always great to be here, Foster.
Ed's one of our tech specialists, and you've been on the show for, I've lost count.
Since Windows XP, so about probably 2003.
Yeah, 2003.
Way over half.
Yeah. And we have somebody who normally is on the phone with us, but in studio right now, and that's Mr. Mike Brennan.
Or someplace really a lot warmer than this.
noticed you're dressed for the cold weather today.
Yes, flannels. Yes. Well, the big storm's coming in and all that.
That's right. Mike is the editor of MI Tech News, and we usually kind of give you a sampler of some of the headlines for MI Tech News, but I want to talk a little bit more about MI Tech News. But then we also have Patrick Paul in studio. Patrick, good to have you with us.
Thanks for having me, Foster.
And in the second half of our program, this first hour, starting at roughly 4:30, we're going to be talking with him and Rick Broida, who is our gadget guy, also the cheapskate. We'll be talking about Hemming Right, which is this device that Patrick has brought into the studio. And you as a writer, I know, wanted to see this thing in person, didn't you?
Oh, I'm very excited to see this thing. This just takes me back.
All right. You can also, by the way, if you go to internetadvisor.net, there is a video that you can click on that came from your site, Patrick, and you can see a little bit more about that. But in about 20 minutes, we're going to be doing that a little more in detail about that. And then we're also going to be talking with Charlie Hopper and Vince Schmielewski in just a moment. But right now, what I want to do, Mike, is go back to you to talk a little bit about MI Tech News. We normally have like three headlines from MI Tech News, but let's spend a little time today talking about what MI Tech News is and why we've been decided to come together with you as a co-contributor to your magazine.
Yeah, well, you're a partner on the e-newsletter that goes out. We pick up the podcast at the website. Then, of course, we have our other partnerships we're developing with several other different groups around around the area, like IT&D. I know you're on that show, and Michipreneur, and Tech 248 out of Oakland County. We're still getting all the details worked out on that. But what we're trying to do is have this be a comprehensive site you can come to get all the tech news that's going on in Southeast Michigan and the rest of the state. And you can get it in text. You can get it in as a podcast and audio. Mm-hmm. Later on, we're going to do video. We're going to introduce that. So we've got lots of things going on.
You've been around for a long time covering technology and news in general, haven't you, in the
35
area?
Years.
Wow.
Yes. I know I started when I was 10. So just like Gary started the show when he was 17, because he's only 34 now.
Thank you, Mike. I owe you.
Yeah, it was the kind of a lemonade stand out front of your house, probably was the first one. But you've gone from, if you will, text, which is, you know, and you've got, folks, if you go to internetadvisor.net and scroll down the page, you can see a subscribe now button there and just click on that. Free for nothing. Every Friday, you'll get a whole list of those headlines, but also now also the ability to tap into the audio from our podcast for IT and the D, as you were saying, and many other things, and soon some video as well. Why put all that together?
Well, everybody's really busy. We want to give them a comprehensive read. I package it all. You can go over there 24/7, of course, and pick it up. Most people wait till the newsletter comes out on Fridays, and they use it as a weekend read. And it's, you know, 25, 30 stories there, links to different things. I look at my web traffic, and I can see a lot of people. That's when they're really clicking, is Fridays and over the weekends. So we want to give you a comprehensive read to get you caught up what's going on, again, around Southeast Michigan, where most of the industry is located. But there's other things going on in Lansing and Kalamazoo, Grand Rapids, Points North.
Mike has really been involved in technology writing, technology reporting for years. On the way in today, we were talking about your stint at San Jose Mercury News. And,
oh, wow.
And then the Free Press and as the tech writer there. And now
I started out at Electronic Buyers News in New York in 1981.
Wow.
Writing a trade paper.
I wasn't
going to
give any dates, you know.
I was a very young man at the time. So that's been my whole career as business and technology. As I was mentioning, I was looking at the device thinking, looks just like the Osborne computer.
That you probably wrote about, right?
Yes, I knew Adam Osborne, a former journalist himself, right, you know. So.
That's interesting. Well, and that's part of how it has progressed. And one of the things I know that you're focusing on now are entrepreneurs like Patrick Paul and his other companions there.
Right.
You want to make sure that the entrepreneurs know, for instance, about meetings where they can network. And also, you report on things like this that have come out.
Yeah, absolutely. We try to get a lot of new products out there. I don't tend to write about them when they first come out. I want to see if they have any kind of life to them.
Sure.
We have so much going on right now, particularly in downtown Detroit, involving tech entrepreneurs.
Exactly.
All these services and available that just when I started covering this 20 years ago in the state, there was hardly any of this around.
Mike, you'd be lucky to find one.
You're going to stick around for the show, right?
Absolutely.
Excellent. Mike Brennan, who is the editor of MI Tech News, will be with us during the program. Again, if you want to sign up for it, it's absolutely free. Simply go to internetadvisor.net, scroll down the page, and click on the button, and you can put your email address in there, and it'll be starting to arrive on Fridays for you. Coming back in just a moment to talk to another pioneer. Welcome to our very special program. This is the 17th anniversary of the Internet Advisor. Gary Baker with me in studio, my co-founder, and along with us is Ed Rudell, who's been here for most of those years.
Since as one 2003, I
right,
think.
Right, our tech advisors. And Mike Brennan is with us as well, the editor of MI Tech News. And we got some more people we're going to be bringing into the conversation here, including a gentleman who is has been helping us with our webpage for a long time. And that's Vince Schmileski. Hi, Vince. How are you doing?
Hi, I'm doing great.
Thank you for being with us. Vince is the owner of Visual Compass. That's VC Web Design is what we knew them as originally. Nice offices in downtown Ypsilanti. And you are actually the folks who are behind helping us keep our page up and running. And by the way, my hat's off to Brad Thornhill, one of your guys there, for customer service above and beyond the call.
Isn't that nice?
Yeah, he's great.
Isn't that nice?
He did a wonderful job. And Vince is somebody who has helped us to keep our presence on the net, which is kind of interesting for us because we're coming out of radio, a terrestrial radio, where the strength was just being on a station like WJR, which was 50,000 watts and one of the
original 12 super stations.
One of the clear channel stations heard just about everywhere. I used to do overnights and we'd be heard in Norway. but now, about the turn of the century, the internet became kind of a level playing field for all of us in broadcast. And suddenly, major stations like WJR still continue to have very wide and faithful audiences. But now, even a little podcast could be heard on a level playing field with WJ. And that's where people like you, Vince, have come in. And you really have been part of creating a whole other way of broadcasting to people. I think in some ways called narrowcasting.
Narrowcasting, yep. Yeah,
it's,
and
it's sort of amazing you guys have been doing this for so long. I'm thinking this internet thing is actually going to catch on.
Well, I tell you, it's interesting. In some ways, it's been a real challenge to come out of the broadcast field. I started 40 years ago in the broadcast field into this other field of podcasting, because in many ways, there's a lot of differences to it about the way that you package things becomes much more important, almost than the content. And that's where people like you come in with Visual Compass.
Well, we try. I mean, you guys definitely keep us busy.
That's a very nice way of saying that, Vince.
He's talking about my ham-handed attempts to change the website.
Always pushing the envelope.
Oh, my. They took away the keys to the really important stuff from me, so I wouldn't screw it up completely.
Yeah,
but I know,
good.
Vince, you're working on a new website for us, aren't you?
We are working very hard on that right now. Actually, I'm hoping to have something for you in the next week or two to look at.
This 2015 is going to be a very special year. Let me bring somebody else into the conversation who is also celebrating an anniversary about the same time as us, and that's Mr. Charlie Hopper from Pasty.net. Charlie, how are you doing?
Hey, Foster. Real good. Happy anniversary.
Happy anniversary to you, because as I understand it, you are celebrating 17th as well.
Well, we will 1 month from now. We started actually with the PastyCam 1 month behind you guys, although we'd been around for about 3 years before that. But happy anniversary.
Thank you very
Charlie,
much.
When I was mentioning to my wife that you were going to be on the show today, all she can remember is me coming up and us doing a live radio show. That was before live radio on the internet was really... you know, it was as widespread as it is. And we were sitting in a beauty salon under the cone of silence. Do you remember that? She certainly reminded me of that.
I have a picture of you and I sitting there under their hair dryers, and it was just, it's hanging in my office at home.
Oh, my God.
I will hunt that up, and if you go to our Facebook page, you'll see that as there. Now, we should say, Charlie, you operate an internet service. You are providing internet access, broadband access. One of the pioneers up there in the Upper Peninsula, and you are up in the Upper Peninsula. You're on the Keweenaw Peninsula, right at the very tippy top.
Oh, yeah. We started our first wireless, as far as those remote broadband locations, in 2000. We started our experiments, and in 2001, we had our first access points with Michigan Tech University's Keweenaw Research Center.
Ah.
And from there, it just has grown. And, wow, that was how many years ago? 14. Almost 15 years ago here.
Kind of an interesting parallel, Gary, because I think you started your first endeavor on the internet in conjunction with some of the things at the University of Michigan.
Well, it really wasn't, but it was because we were so close to the university, we kind of piggybacked on some of the activity that Merritt was doing.
That's what I was thinking of, okay.
Yep, absolutely, and that was back in the early part of 94.
Now, Charlie, you essentially provide, and you use WiMAX a lot, am I right?
Yes, we do have WiMAX in Houghton Hancock area.
So that means you're beaming the broadband signal to a receiver over a wireless connection, right?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Yep. And that's how you get into some of those very remote areas. And then from there, it's fed out then to your subscribers at the node, right?
Yes. And we have not only WiMAX, but we have a Wi-Fi network, a Part 15 network that uses 900 megahertz and 2 and 5 gigahertz. We just use all of the frequencies available in all of the remote locations to reach people way out in the woods.
How many subscribers do you have up there?
We have over 1,000 wireless. We also have a lot of DSL and dial users. Would you believe it? We still have lots of dial users all over the country,
really?
Because we're a reseller for some DSL and dial services.
Oh,
but our main focus is that wireless that serves people with broadband that there is just no alternative for it.
I love the fact that we kind of made this hookup way back when we first started, because we have some friends up in the Upper Peninsula as well, and Gary had gone up. I think you had gone up for your wife's in Bootjack, wasn't it?
That's right. They have a cabin up there.
Yeah, so we made that link early on.
It was interesting. You know, every time I go to the webcam that they have up there, Charlie, it seems like it's always dark. Especially this time of year. This time of year, yeah. It's like do you get an hour or two of sunlight, don't you, or at least daylight?
Oh yeah, almost like up in the Arctic Circle there.
Almost. But
it's fascinating.
This weekend, by the way, is the Winter Carnival, Heitkenpäivä in Hancock. So all the Finns are celebrating winter by diving in naked in the canal and everything.
Oh no. Well, he's not going to dive in naked, but our Shane Hamlin will be jumping into the Detroit River to the benefit of Special Olympics. And by the way, if you go to internetadvisor.net, we have a link to that here. So Shane will come back. He'll turn blue and then come back and talk to us about that. How about the future for you, Charlie? I mean, we haven't got much time, but what kind of things are you looking forward to?
Well, we just continue growing and expanding, getting more users on. And also, the FCC has come out with some new, very tough standards. They're right away here, we're kicking into 10 megabits down as being the standard to even be called broadband. If you're slower than 10 megabits, you can't use the term broadband.
Yeah, and I hear it's going to 25, Charlie.
Exactly. This past week, they had a vote on that, and we're constantly scrambling to catch up, and it looks like we're moving toward LTE because that's the only way to get those kinds of speeds over the air. Other than that, you're going to have fiber to the home.
Mm, very interesting. So, do you think you can make that challenge? You can meet it?
Well, we have to this point. We just continue growing it, and we already have some LTE equipment that we're working with to put into place, and we'll be pushing our WiMAX to the limit, too.
Charlie, I'm betting on you because every challenge I've seen you face, you've conquered. So
absolutely. Charlie, thank you so much for being with us, and congratulations to you in advance on your 17th anniversary coming up.
Well, thanks a lot, and happy anniversary to you guys.
All right, take care. Charlie. And Vince, I'm going to wrap things up with you as well. Thank you very much for all the help you've given me when I followed things up on our internetadvisor.net. But we got a brand new look coming.
And yes, it's my pleasure to work with you guys, and I'm really looking forward to the new look and the new site.
It's an exciting time.
Yeah, he does such a great job for all of his clients, but he certainly takes care of us.
Right. And that, by the way, is called Visual Compass, and you're a web design company. And what are some of the other things you do besides web design?
Media production, video photography, marketing, and graphic design.
You do hosting as well?
We do. We'll be hosting your new site.
Yep. We're looking forward to that as well. So that's Vince Mielewski, and thank you so much for all that you have done for us and keeping us on the air despite my fumbling around. And especially,
you're very welcome.
I was very, very thankful for Brad Thornhill and the great work that he did, along with Eric Anderson, who got us some information that we needed, and we're back on iTunes again. So, Vince, thank you again for all that you've done for us.
Happy anniversary.
All right, thank you. We wouldn't be around to celebrate that happy anniversary without Vince
and a lot of other people that have helped us working behind the scenes.
Absolutely. Well, we got a great program coming up, and as a matter of fact, in just a little bit, we're going to be talking with an inventor of a brand new device that looks like something that actually you might have had in a museum somewhere. But it's brand new, and it's something called Hemingwrite. And we'll be back to talk with Patrick Paul about that here in studio. Rick Broido, who is our gadget guy, is here. He's also a writer. We thought it'd be a good time to bring him in to talk about this machine. So you don't want to go away. That's what's continuing here on our 17th anniversary edition of the Internet Advisor. When we started the Internet Advisor 17 years ago with Gary Baker, the premise for it was to answer people's questions about their computers. And since that time, well, we've gone, from those noisy dial-up modems and getting things fixed. Mike Brennan, let's see, those modems were, I forget what they were, the baud rate or whatever it was, but
really slow, like
really
four or something, you know?
Yeah.
I think when we started, they were just coming out with 14.4s.
That's right.
When we started the radio show.
That's right.
But I remember my first modem tying back into the Michigan terminal system was at 300 baud.
Oh, wow.
I was young. I was really young at that time. But that was so cool because otherwise you had to go to the, you know, into the computer room, into the user room there and use one of their dumb terminals. And this way you could sit at home. No matter how slow it was still better.
How far we have come in these 17 years. It's amazing to think about. Well, what I was trying to say is that we have transitioned as well. And one of the things that I love doing now, because part of our focus, Gary, we have twofold. One was to help people with their problems, to get them on the internet and around it and over their problems. But the other thing also was to highlight Michigan businesses that were involved in technology.
That's right.
And that means, Mike, you're involved with entrepreneurs as well. That would be highlighting people from our area here who have created new devices, software, et cetera. So that's why we're delighted to have with us in studio somebody from the Detroit area. Patrick Pohl is with us, who is one of the co-founders of HemingRight. And by the way, if you go to our homepage, internetadvisor.net, there's a video you can play to see a little bit more about what it is. But in studio, we have him with the device that we can bear. Hold the microphone. See it, folks? Just look at the microphone there.
Oh, yes. Hold it. Could you hold it a little higher so everybody can see?
Okay. Patrick does not understand how radio works.
Pictures here. But we brought you in, Patrick, to talk about this the whole process of how this came to be. Rick Broido's here as well, who is what he's... an experienced writer, as well as our gadget guy. And you've been writing for how many years now, Rick?
Oh, my gosh, too many. 25, so, 25 years.
We're going to be talking about this device in terms of your experience. But, Patrick, first of all, where did this idea come from to create a device that is essentially digital but disconnected completely from the internet?
Okay, so actually let me walk it back a second.
Yeah.
You know, there's two of us. I'm the software guy, and then you know, my partner, Adam Lieb, is the... mechanical engineer.
We
actually both had been working downtown since 2013 in the Bizdom Startup Accelerator with their own companies in the same co-working space. And so, you know, for the listeners out there, a co-working space, you know, there may be as many as 10 companies, 30 people,
right,
all working on their own different things. And so you can imagine there's you know, a great diversity of ideas and backgrounds.
Yeah.
And
we
I
heard
was,
about that like at Bamboo Detroit, I think. Another place like that. We heard about that. Yeah, go ahead. Yep.
Yeah, absolutely. Also visited Bamboo. There's a few other co-working spaces all around Detroit. And, you know, one of these days, you know, I sat kitty corner from Adam Lieb, so when I didn't want to work, I'd be, you know, shooting the shit with him. and one of the times I was sharing how, you know, when I needed to write something, I'm kind of my own biggest critic. So if I'm using Microsoft Word, it's too easy to just, you know, delete that last paragraph because it sucked and rewrite it, et cetera. And so I would actually use a lot of distraction-free software that was around that basically just blanks out your whole screen. And sometimes you can even disable the backspace key. And so that was what was critical for me is that
on the software side.
If I sat down for 2 hours, normally I might only write half a page, but if I can't backspace, I'm at least going to get, you know, 2 hours of writing, 2 hours of characters on the page.
I love that. Okay.
And you know, this was just us chatting, and, you know, maybe this was, you know, a year ago, November, something like that. And it kind of percolated, and Adam, you know, didn't really think much of it at the time, but there's actually a lot of professional writers out there that go to great lengths to get rid of distraction. You know, some people will travel with two laptops, one that's bare bones, only has their writing software on it, and then another that has, you know, Facebook and internet connectivity and everything.
Rick, can you relate to that?
Gosh, I can absolutely relate. It's I find myself now, I'll sit and write a paragraph, and then I'll check my email, or then I'll check Facebook.
Because it's all there.
And it's ridiculous. Yeah, the distractions that pull at you, especially when you're trying to do something creative and you're trying to have, you know, words come out, it just doesn't work.
Yeah,
and so this was
the
a special
flow was constantly
to me. The flow
broken,
was constantly interrupted.
That's what you were getting at, Patrick.
Yeah,
right?
And creativity really comes from, like, solitude, being alone to, you know, let the juices flow, that type of thing. And so Adam, you know, even me using these kind of software applications, it takes a lot of discipline not to minimize and get back on, you know, email or Facebook,
et cetera. Exactly.
And so he came up with the idea, you know, let's make this into a standalone device. And the great thing, you know, you were saying earlier how, you know, 10, 15 years ago when the internet was first happening, you could do a podcast and reach so many viewers. So, of course, there were a lot of, you know, dot-com startups that were able to provide services over the internet for the first time. Really, in the last 5 years, the same thing is kind of happening for hardware startups, where there's a lot of kind of developer kits that make it very easy to develop on, you know, a little chip that has built-in Wi-Fi. And all of a sudden, I mean, if you guys have heard about the Internet of Things, that's, you know, putting Wi-Fi on a thermostat, basically
refrigerator, whatever else.
You know, we have a full-size mechanical keyboard, an e-paper display, and nothing else. You know, so there's no other It's very deliberate that we wanted to make something that was great at one thing, that did just one thing and one thing sublimely well.
So writing. You and Adam then got together, and it's like Reese's peanut butter. No, the peanut, what was it? The chocolate fell into the peanut butter or whatever. You got together.
Adam likes to draw this Venn diagram. His startup at the time was a nutritional supplements company. So that's the left circle in the Venn diagram. I was doing I had a residential solar startup. So that's the right side. When you bring them two together, you get digital typewriter.
Boom! I love it. And that's the marvel that comes out of these startup, especially these little incubators, essentially, where people are coming from many different directions. Bottom line is, he came up with the mechanical device that reminds me of the old Smith Corona I used to have.
I was going to say, the first time I saw something like that, it was called a Selectric.
Well, the Selectric was down the road from the Smith Corona that I used in college.
I was older.
Yeah, I was older than you.
Yeah, I was younger than you.
But anyway, it essentially looks like a little portable device, like with a keyboard and everything else. Yeah. For you folks who have used portable typewriters in the old days, it looks exactly like that.
Yeah, so, I mean, it was definitely inspired by, the typewriter. We basically took all the best aspects of, like, the longhand journal typewriter and even, the word processor and combined them in the one device.
I love it.
And I guess I'll see if I can swivel the mic and show off some of the typing. this is it's a mechanical keyboard. So what that means is, a normal laptop.
Go ahead, and I think we can pick it up. The engineers will pick this up. Okay. Put your microphone. Let's hear the sound of it as you hit the keys. Go ahead. Okay, so you have the real sound of hitting the keys. And is there like a good response in terms of
it's the
tactile response. It's like,
in the early days of computing, when we were going to computers, manufacturers were coming up with cheaper and cheaper keyboards because they were, less expensive. They could sell the systems. People would keep their old IBM AT and 3270 keyboards because they liked the mechanical
feel of them.
People go to great lengths to spend $180 for keyboards like that.
And you package that in here.
Obviously, this is one of like two prototypes, right. So, most of the electronics, we got off the shelf. And so we're actually using a Poker 2 keyboard, which is on anyone's like top five list of mechanical keyboards that are made. And the difference, again, with a normal keyboard is what's called a membrane keyboard. It has these little bumpers on the bottom.
Yep.
And so you're constantly grounding out your fingers to register a key press. A mechanical keyboard actually actuates at about 50% of the way down. So if you were actually trained to type on a mechanical keyboard, you would never get carpal tunnel, because you're not actually hitting.
Oh.
You can kind of float on the air. Now, of course, I grew up on the same, typewriter as everyone uses, so I still ground out the keys. But
I you're right, exactly. So it's a lighter touch. Accomplishes the same thing. Is that how you can you relate to that, Rick?
Well, because when I started out, it was old IBM style keyboards and computers, monochrome screen, and this exact kind of keyboard is kind of how I started my writing career. And so I've had this evolution from this to more of the island style keyboards that we see now on laptops and tablets and everything. And now this almost feels quaint to me and like a nostalgic in a way, because I've weaned myself off of this style keyboard, but I remember it was like kicking and screaming that I went from this style to what we use now. So it's wild to see this come back.
Patrick, in like 30 seconds, you put this together. You and Adam then put this together. Did he fabricate this? You said this is one of two prototypes.
Yeah, it's funny. One of the other things that's kind of happened in the last 5 years is 3D printing. This is actually not 3D printed. It's actually a challenge to find a 3D printer that can print larger than 10 by 10 by 10 inches. And so we had this. The form factor is dictated by having a full-size keyboard. There's a lot of, netbooks that really crunch the keys together, and they suck to type on.
Yes, they do.
So this keyboard is, I think, like 11.2 inches wide, and that basically dictated the rest of the size of the Hemingwright. And we basically would have had to redo the whole design, and Adam, who is a mechanical engineer, he just decided he was going to mill this out of aluminum. So we went to the junkyard, bought 380 pounds of aluminum. That was too heavy to get in his van, so we cut it into four wedges.
I love it.
And then basically CNC machined it into what you see here.
Right, but the other important part to make that we haven't got a chance to is this is connected via the internet, and you can select where you'd like to have the information published.
Yep,
now we're gonna get to that.
Oh, we're gonna get to that.
Yep, we got another part coming
another
up here.
Segment.
We've been talking with Patrick Paul about Hemingwright, which is a device that's in studio right now. Kind of exciting because we're on the cusp of this thing breaking free. Before we go any further, I'd like to acknowledge folks behind the glass. That's Mr. Rich Lozinski. Thank you very much, our engineer, and also Eric Dorsch, who's handling the phones today. Thank you so much for being here. Foster Brown, along with Gary Baker, the co-founders of the Internet Advisor, our 17th anniversary, Ed Rudell in studio with us, and Mike Brennan, who is the editor of MI Tech News as well. And Rick Broida, our gadget guy, also a writer, is here, along with Patrick Pohl. And Patrick, we've been talking about your invention, along with your partner, Adam Leave. It's called HemmingWrite. And you've got a device in front of you, but that's a prototype, okay? You haven't mass-produced this yet. We're talking about how you guys got together, and then you went to a program called Kickstarter. Well, first of all, you built that in a makerspace in the area here, right?
That's correct. Shout out to i3 Detroit. They're a makerspace, so you can do welding, woodworking, CNC machining, anything.
Right. So you took your ideas, and you were able to go into this makerspace and use machinery that you probably could never have rented before in any way.
Absolutely.
But it's all there. You created your actual physical device. This went from ideas and whiteboards into a real thing. The device now weighs about how much?
So this prototype is 6 pounds.
Okay.
We basically were very generous with like the width of the chassis, right, because we didn't want to, you know, punch through anything. The first generation HemmingWrite, you know, shipping later this year, will be 4 pounds.
Okay. So then you took this, we've got this device, then you went to a Kickstarter, which is one of those funding sites. And matter of fact, folks, if you go to internetadvisor.net, in the middle of the page, there's a video. If you click on that, that's a video from the Kickstarter site, and you'll see both Patrick Pohl and Adam Leib in there giving kind of a presentation about your device. It's fascinating. So on Kickstarter, you had a goal of raising how much money?
We set it at $250,000.
And the goal was to do that by in December, wasn't it?
We set it to like 45 days.
Okay.
So,
and when you got to 45 days, you got there early, didn't you?
Yeah, so, you know, if you had asked me a year ago if I would be working on a digital typewriter right now, that'd sound pretty ludicrous. And I think a lot of, you know, listeners right now think it's pretty ludicrous. And again, Adam and I had, you know, this was like a side project that we either needed to succeed with or fail with very quickly so we could go back to our other occupations.
That's interesting.
And so we wanted to get it in front of people very quickly. And on Kickstarter, we launched it on Wednesday, December 10th. And within the first 20 hours, we had raised, you know, $200,000. We had sold probably 500 HemmingWrites.
Wow. And so people, how does this work then? Did people get, like, Rick, if you had committed a certain amount of money to that, you would have gotten one of these things when they're finally produced? Is that how it works?
Yeah. So Kickstarter is all about matching inventors with their earliest, you know, customers, their stake, you know, who became stakeholders. So,
right,
you know, now we're up, you know, we're on the hook to deliver, you know, 1,000 HemmingWrites to 1,000 backers. But at the same time,
you've got 1,000 sales.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's better to. It's so much better to fund your company with sales than it is with venture capital, right?
And I would not have enjoyed trying to pitch, you know, investors on the idea of a digital typewriter before we had any type of, you know, market
success.
I'm trying to envision
you guys going on Shark Tank with this or something.
No, that'd be scary.
You ended up with $342,000, though. I mean, you were like $100,000 beyond your goal, roughly, almost. So where do you go from here now to get this thing into people's hands?
Well, we definitely have a lot of work, and fortunately, you know, we have the resources to do it. And we are actually, you know, we'll be making our first, you know, hire, you know, within the next month to get this through. We actually were in Boston last week meeting with, you know, some of our prospective partners to actually assist us with some of the manufacturing.
Okay, so you then will link up with somebody who can build this for you. That's the key for you now, right?
Yeah, it is effective to be able to outsource, you know, to work with a more experienced contract.
Okay,
sure.
Right.
Once you get the prototype done, now you got to go to a production house that can actually build these in scale, right, in mass.
And that's what you're doing right now.
Yeah, and there's actually a lot of, you know, and that's just one, you know, hat we have to wear is fulfilling these. But there's, you know, Kickstarter is great. There's, you know, hundreds of projects have been funded and shipped to their earliest backers. But a lot of Kickstarter projects, you know, these great novel products fall into a chasm where after that first buzz, they don't actually get into a, you know, brick and mortar store or something. So we still have to be focused on kind of the 12 to 18 month intermediate time. Like, you know, after these first 1,000 HemmingWrites, how are we going to sell the next 10,000?
Right. So, and I want to make sure that we don't overlook kind of what the product is and what it can do.
Yeah.
Because I know unless you're looking at a picture, you can't really get a feel for it. But I mean, just imagine a kind of an old school typewriter, but instead of paper, you have an e-ink, an e-paper screen. And you can explain better than I, Patrick, how it's actually a connected device, even though it looks very old school.
So yeah, you can work on a typewriter and get the same distraction free. You know, if you don't have a phone, you don't have a laptop, you just have a typewriter. But then everything's typed. You have to like scan it or retype it to get it onto your computer for editing. So the Hemingwrite is actually cloud connected, so it's constantly syncing and saving to our web application Postbox. For 90% of users, you can just rest assured that it's being saved somewhere, safe for you to access later. But we can actually integrate with Evernote, Dropbox, Google Drive, so that magically, whenever you're finished typing something on the Hemingwrite, you can sit down at your desktop at work or at home and open it in Microsoft Word to edit.
So to Ed's point before, Eddie, this sounds like you got a Wi-Fi chip in there then, Patrick?
Yes.
Okay, so it is connected to the internet in that sense.
Right, and its real purpose is to provide distraction-free, continuous
creation
without all the pop-ups and whistles and...
Yeah, but the nice thing is that when the product is done, it goes up. Rick, you creating an article on there. It is being saved wirelessly then up into the internet through a Wi-Fi connection.
Yeah, and we're also we want to do the first, 25% of writing really well, which is the first draft. So you hammer out your first draft on the Hemingwrite, then you get it online, and you can share it with, friends, family reviews, feedback, and then edit the final composition.
Would this fit your process?
Well, I'm glad you asked that because I was just thinking about it, too. When I was fiddling with it a little bit before we started the show, I started typing a bit, and then the first thing I did was start to look for arrow keys so that I could move my cursor back up and edit what I had done. And then Patrick explained, well, there are no arrow keys because the whole idea here is that you're just basically doing kind of a brain dump. In other words, you're typing just as you would on a typewriter. No whiteout, no... There's no backspace key, nothing like that. Well, there's a backspace key, but in any case, you don't edit in the traditional way.
Yeah.
And so for me, who edits very heavily as I go, I'd have to retrain my brain to work this way. And I'm not opposed to that. It's just it would be a change for me.
And we understand this is a very niche product. This isn't going to work for everyone.
Right.
And if we had tried, if we tried to please everyone, we'd end up with something that doesn't work for anyone. So, we're trying to put something new out there that doesn't really exist.
And is it possible, too, that in the process of a second iteration of this thing, second version of it, you might be including some things based on the feedback that you get from people who get it in their hands?
And absolutely. And even Hemingway, I think, said that, rewriting is a critical part of writing.
Exactly.
Did you have a target audience when you started out, or was just your basic idea and you're pushing it out on the market?
So, I built this for myself first and foremost.
I love it.
But you know what? We kind of expected that it would be most applicable to creative writers, long-form writers. But the other kind of one of the significant people that started reaching out to us once we got some early press was screenplay writers.
Oh.
They really crave a distraction-free writing tool.
Okay.
Really.
Are there different formats, like script writing and things like that, that you can plug into this, different kind of templates?
So, right on the Hemingwrite itself, everything is plain text.
Okay, gotcha.
But it's still very easy to get this into, a richly formatted, Word document or even some of the screenplay documents that are out there.
What's the format that you save it to, let's say, the internet in? What is it, .txt file?
It's .txt, but there's a lot of things like, I don't want to go too far down the rabbit hole, that can accommodate people to get it into the tools they're already using,
so
like
it's
Word.
Pretty easily adaptable then once you get it up there. Patrick Paul, thank you so much for being in studio. I was dying to see this thing, and Rick, I was interested in your responses to that. Patrick Paul and Adam Lieb have created this thing called Hemingwrite, and folks, it's kind of neat because you're seeing them kind of on the cusp of taking this idea. They've got a prototype now, and now it goes to becoming reality with somebody that they're going to be hooking up in this year. I want to have you back once you got that done, okay? Thank
you,
Patrick.
We'll be busy.
Thank you for being here and celebrating our 17th anniversary with us. We're going to be back for an hour number two. For those of you who have listened to us here in this first hour, thank you for joining us here on the Internet Advisor. We look forward to serving you during this 18th year with Gary Baker, Ed Riddell, Kel Carson, and myself, Foster Brown. Stick around. There is an hour number two for those of you who can enjoy it. You're listening to a podcast of the Internet Advisor Show. If you want to see the show notes for this program, visit our homepage at internetadvisor.net. That's where you'll also find past podcasts, our toolkit full of free software to clean up your computer and keep it running strong, and other resources. If you have a question for our hosts, just click the contact form on the homepage. You can also friend us on Facebook.
Now let's get back to the second hour of the Internet Advisor Show podcast.
Thank you for joining us, those of you who will be able to be with us for hour number two of the Internet Advisor. And that's a unique pleasure for those of you who are listening to us on WJRR. Flagship station. It's our 17th anniversary. Foster Brown, Gary Baker, and Ed Rudell, along with Mike Brennan, the editor of MI Tech News, are in studio. If you'd like to call a question in here, our lines are open at 800-859-0957. Again, that's 800-859-0WJR. Give us a call. We'll try to answer your questions. This is a very special broadcast for us. Hi, I'm Foster Brown, the co-host of the program, along with Gary Baker. 17 years ago, we got together. As a matter of fact, I was doing a weekend program on WJR, The Great Weekend, and Gary Baker owned the ISP that I was using at that particular time, and I had some questions about it, about how to get on it and get around it. As a matter of fact, we had a rogue squirrel that was munching on my phone lines.
That was only one of the problems.
That was only one of the problems. But
and that was an interesting one because none of us really thought of that as the problem. We all blamed the technology when, in fact, it was the squirrel.
The squirrel. In any case, Ed Rudell is also with us.
You know, and another reason why they stopped making peanut-flavored insulation for wire.
That's
right. You know what? They had to stop.
Mike Brennan is also with us. He is the editor of MI Tech News.
How you doing?
Hi, I'm delighted to have you in studio with us.
Thank you. I don't usually do this. Usually I'm in some remote location calling in.
Yeah, usually Key West or
someplace warm, than Michigan. Right?
But he's coming here from the Ann Arbor area along with Gary. It used to be he lived out in Grand Rapids, right?
Yeah, Grand Rapids.
Yeah, by the way, our phone lines are open right now. If you're listening to us right now, we're just going to kind of chat away here and hope that you'll interrupt us with your question. I started to say that 17 years ago, we started the program because I had questions about my internet service, and Gary was the person who was in charge of that service. He got on with me doing some helpline at that time in English, and we got my problem solved, and I thought, you know, it'd be kind of neat to have him on to talk with other people, and that's where we started. It was kind of like the last half hour of my show on Saturdays, like from 8:30 to 9 for quite a while.
And then they finally just said, this makes more sense, let's provide you with a better show, a bigger show. So,
and we went on to 1 hour, then on to 2 hours, and you were on TV for quite a while,
right?
On Channel 7.
Channel 7, I did that every Thursday morning for a couple years.
Right.
So that was kind of fun, till I realized you weren't there. It was more fun to do 2 hours here with you. So,
Or having Ed pull our chain or whatever happens. It's good. So, folks, today you're invited to join the conversation with your question. If you have a question about your computer, please give us a call at 800-859-0957. In the meantime, I thought we'd throw this open. Mike, usually we have you call in during the first part of our show to talk about some of the headlines that are on MI Tech News. Every Friday, you produce a whole bunch of headlines that are not just news items, but you also have things for entrepreneurs about where they're meeting, about events coming up, networking events, etc. So it's a great resource, particularly if people have a business or are looking for ways to get together with other people who have that kind of a business.
Yeah, absolutely. That's part of it is I try to make it so that you get a lot out of it. If you want to go to an event, if you want to hear what happened at an event, if you want to get straight news, you want to get a podcast, we try to get it all in there.
And you've added audio elements to it, IT and the D podcast, and also our podcast as well.
And it's Michigan-based, so there's so much news out there.
Yeah.
And you have to filter it somehow, and Mike does just a great job of giving you, a little bit. You can always go deeper, or you can read the headlines. And he selects news that, quite frankly, most of us want to hear and kind of filters out the noise for us. So that helps a lot.
And after 20 years of, I started at the Free Press in 1995 covering technology.
That's right.
Left there in 2000.
Well, you didn't start there, but you started there in Michigan got to Michigan.
So I've been covering Michigan technology for 20 years. And so I pretty much know everybody.
You and I met before, back when you were at the Free Press.
That's right.
You know, Mike, one of the headlines that you have this week is that the MEDC, Michigan
Economic Development Corporation.
They have a study that shows state investment in technology generates some nice dollars.
Well, yeah,
nice
I put it in the guest column because it came in real late, and didn't get a chance to really check it out. But, they're saying that that every dollar that the state invests in these various entrepreneurs is getting a 35x return, which is any venture capitalists would know, that's like the ultimate home run.
Oh, yeah.
So for every dollar they invest, it's getting a $35 return.
Well, the Michigan Strategic Fund, which is, the MEDC administers those funds,
right. Mm-hmm. Yep.
And they invest them in various companies. And they're saying that of all the money invested, it's realized $710 million in private investment. When they do the math, it comes out to $1 from the state, $35 from the private sector.
Wow.
Mike, you said something really critical, which is you didn't get a chance to check it out, so you put it in the guest column.
Right.
So you do vet these sorts of stories when they come in. So it's not just like a lot of reporters do that don't have the resources or access to sources that you have, you're able to figure out what's true or not and not print something that is too much hype, right?
I try to do that. I mean, I get flooded with press releases. Everybody wants me to write about them, this, that, and the other. And I don't really write that much about what comes in. I mean, I'm very selective about it. I try to run it down with the talking to sources out there and see what's going on.
And you also attend many of these events, like the one that was just this last weekend.
ACE. Actually, I wanted to bring that up because the Makers Movement was represented. Jules Ferrari, who is the co-founder of The Grommet, which is this incredible site that started a couple years ago for makers. And Makers is what she pointed out to me, it really grabbed my attention. She said Michigan's a very fertile place for makers because we're a very hands-on state. You know, the manufacturing
background. We know how to manufacture stuff, yeah.
It's like what we heard in the first hour, the Hemingwright device.
Right. Mm-hmm.
They are creating something physical.
Well, and it was interesting when TechShop, which started out in the Valley, their second or third site that they located was here in Michigan. Mark Hatch came here and spent some time here because of the mentality and the manufacturing mentality that we have here in this state.
This is a conversation we're going to continue with throughout the rest of this hour, but it's also a time for you to call in. Ed Rudell is sitting here waiting to help people with tech advice. 800-859-0957. And Jeff, we will be with you in just a moment. Welcome back to the Internet Advisor Hour number 2. And it's a very special one because it's the hour that you can call in with your problems, your questions. That's how we began 17 years ago. I'm Foster Brown. Gary Baker, my co-host and founder of the program, is here along with Ed Rudell, our tech expert, and Mike Brennan. And our number is 800-859-0957. If you got a question, please feel free to break into the conversation here. We'll give you priority and see if we can get something done to help you with your concerns. Jeff from Clinton Township, thank you for joining us on our anniversary edition here on the Internet Advisor.
Thanks so much for having me. I have a question. I've got a D-Link router. I've got a newer laptop, Toshiba, with Windows 8.1. And I went onto the D-Link website last night and noticed that my security wasn't set up. So I went and set up my security, and then I tried to go back into the wireless setup, and then I'm having a difficulty trying to move past that, I guess.
Ah, okay. So when you say you went to the D-Link site, you're talking about the website that's integrated in your D-Link router?
Yeah. What is I 196.
Yeah, 192.168.1.1 or whatever.
Exactly. Yep. I had set up a password before with that, but then I went in and looked at my security. I noticed I didn't have a security setting, so I went in there and I set up the security setting.
Mm-hmm.
Now on my laptop, I go into that specific site that I've got it set up for, and I'm not even able to go into any kind of security mode or whatnot to set it up so that I can access that particular site.
Oh, okay. So your PC or your laptop still can connect to the internet. Your question is that you're trying to access again the configuration web portal that's integrated on your D-Link router, and you're trying to go back into it, and it's not allowing you.
Yes, obviously it's got the security set up on it now, but right. Now I want to be able to go into my computer so that I can also put in the password so that I can access this particular wireless router.
Right, and okay, are you able to access the internet?
Well, hardline, yeah, right now.
Oh, hardline, so not wirelessly.
Yeah, that's what I'm doing right now, but I'm not able to access it through Wi-Fi.
Yeah,
because
you may have to go back to the. You may have to hit the reset button on your D-Link and go back from scratch, and that can happen on there. I mean, I leave my wireless router at my house open, but my nearest neighbor is like 1,500 feet away from me. And I have my wireless router in the basement. You get 100 feet away from my house, you ain't gonna connect to it. But you know.
So it's something that I might not need to worry about.
Well, no. I mean, it is important to set up the baseline wireless security on your wireless router, so that yes, in order to connect to it, that you can you have to enter a password. Once the password is saved on a modern laptop or another wireless device like a phone, it usually will remember that password. Matter of fact, most wireless routers provide you the ability to set up not only a wireless connection, but they also provide the ability to set up a guest network connection, which is open. Or you can set up a unique password for them. That way, if you have family members or friends that come over and they want to attach to your wireless network, you're not giving out your main wireless network password, you know? It sounds like you've gone through the additional expense of purchasing your own wireless router rather than relying on the wireless routers provided by Comcast or Charter or, you know, AT&T. And that's what I've done as well. That way I have full control of my wireless network. If I wanted to, I could set up my wireless security on there so that from the internet, from my work or from a Starbucks, I can actually look into the wireless network and to see if my kids are doing their homework or what are they looking on YouTube, you know? And so there was a time when I did that, you know, just to make sure they were doing their homework.
Right, yeah, exactly.
But it sounds like you may have misconfigured something on your D-Link wireless router.
Been tough being a kid growing up in the Riddell household. Yeah, nothing was safe.
Yep. But, it, yeah, there should be a reset switch in the back.
Okay, yeah, and I think that was going to be my next procedure too, is just to reset the whole thing.
I think on a lot of the new routers, they have a button on the side of the router. I noticed that, for instance, I put an ASUS router on just recently, and now instead of having to pull the plug and things like that, there's a little button there for the Wi-Fi where you can turn Wi-Fi off and turn it back on.
Oh, that's a nice feature.
That reset, which is really nice. So I don't know if that would accomplish the same thing.
Well, they usually, you know, remember the old paperclip or a pen tip?
Oh, the reset, that's right.
Reset.
That's what this one does have. Yep. It's got the old paperclip type.
Okay, you put it's a little hole that you stick the paperclip in and dink, it goes back.
And some of the wireless routers, the reset, like say it's locked up and you just don't want to unplug it. Some of them, what you actually have to do is depress the reset button with the paperclip or the pen tip, and then you have to plug it in while it is depressed for 5 seconds, and then that does the full manufacturer's reset.
Okay.
You know, it depends. Look on YouTube. You may find a friendly video that describes how to lock down your particular model D-Link, and hopefully it's made by someone that's older than 21 years old. You know, and I mean, there's so many of those videos are just so hard to, as you say, you got to vet through them to find out, okay. Yes. You know, Foster, when I was trying to talk to you about your Amazon Fire Stick, I was trying to find a video that was made by someone older than 21. I had a hard time doing it.
I love it.
That doesn't begin every sentence with the word so.
I know. My goodness.
That's the new isn't it?
So. Yes, it is. It is. You're right. That is exactly it. It's funny. We had somebody in studio with us in the first hour. That was exactly it. I would say he's, you know.
It's of that generation. And my kids do it occasionally.
Yeah, it's a new punctuation.
It is.
Absolutely.
Okay, Jeff, we give you a hand with that?
Yeah, I think I'm good. I'm going to go back and go from there. Thank you so much.
You're welcome, and thank you for joining us here on our anniversary program.
You know, and he's taking one step further. He wants to secure his wireless network and probably look at more advanced features. You have the ability with the wireless router to also lock it down to only specific devices. But, you know, that guest feature is on modern wireless routers is a nice feature. That way you don't have to give them your real one. And some of them rotate. The guest password will rotate the password based on, you know, whatever criteria you have.
I noticed that there were two levels that my new router gave me. One was two different
802.11g or n or whatever.
Yeah,
and
for the guest in particular, like two different settings that you
can
go into.
Guest, less than 10 meg. You know, everyone else, you can go as, you know, family members, 100 meg.
Yeah, it goes fast as you want.
That's nice.
Like throttling that I can control in the house. Right.
So somebody comes in and wants to use your router, for instance, to get their mail or whatever, they can get out to the internet.
It's not going to affect my Netflix streaming.
But it won't affect your Netflix.
That's right.
Yeah. That is interesting. Okay. By the way, go ahead.
We're on our 17th anniversary show, and going back to that very first year, we had a guest, and she was 5 years old.
Oh, yes.
And Lauren Baker, my daughter,
that's right.
Came on and was building a website for her mom for Mother's Day. It was one page, and it took us, I don't know, three or four days to get the one page done.
I love it. I love it.
So, unfortunately, she has moved to L.A.,
unfortunately, says the dad.
Yes.
Lauren doesn't feel that way.
and I'm glad she's yeah. going, and because that's what she wants to do. But I just got a text from her mm-hmm. that said, you should see the video that we posted on our way out. There's over 2,000 views of it.
I love it.
And it's her playing the ukulele.
Oh, my goodness.
Now, she didn't play the ukulele when she left, but
no.
Tim, who actually 5 years ago, he was the Young Citizen of the Year in Ann Arbor, but very, very talented guy.
And a friend of Lauren's.
And a friend of Lauren's must have taught her. Now, I don't know how well she's playing because I went to the video during this segment and was watching a little bit, and it's on mute, so I'll have to... So if you okay. go to Lauren Baker's Facebook page, you could be one of the 2,000 people that have seen this video.
Aren't those it's an interesting bookend on our experience.
Cause it is.
It was 17 years ago. Lauren was in here. She was 5 years old then.
5 years old.
We were upstairs then at the 21st
right,
floor.
The 22nd floor.
22nd sure. floor, yep. rather, at yep. the Fisher Building. And that's the one that J.P. McCarthy, a great broadcaster here for many, many years at broadcast.
Yeah, his putter was in the corner when I first got
still
here.
Still in the so, corner yeah. there was kind of something. And then fast forward to 2015, and that same young lady is now posting videos with her playing yeah. the ukulele. Okay, Dad, you can check it out during the break. We've got Ben from Adrian, and I think I know who that Ben is going to be calling in. If you'd like to call in during this anniversary edition, and we have a question for us, Gary, Ed, and Mike Brennan are here with me, Foster Brown. 800-859-0957 is the number. Give us a call. We'd love to talk with you if you've got a question or just want to celebrate our anniversary. Thank you for being here for our anniversary celebration, our 17th anniversary with the Internet Advisor. During the winter months, very often we have preempted because of football and basketball. We, however, every Saturday are in studio here producing a two-hour program. So if you don't happen to catch us live on the Internet Advisor here at our regular time, 4 to 6 p.m. on our flagship station, WJR Radio in Detroit, you can always get us on our podcast, and you can find that either by going to iTunes now, and hallelujah, we're back on, and you can subscribe to the Internet Advisor there, or you can go to internetadvisor.net and then click on the podcast, and you'll get our latest ones there. Okay, you can either download the whole thing for listening later on, or I've broken them down into different segments, so you can listen in the first hour or listen in the second hour when we talk to our listeners there.
I like listening to you for dessert.
There you go. I often break down the podcast that I listen to, but I'll listen to
it
a piece
sense.
Of it here mm-hmm. and a piece of it there. I don't want anybody having to feel like they have to listen for an hour and 15 minutes to the program. But Mike Brennan, quickly before we've got Ben and Harry we want to get to. And by the way, if you have a question for us or just want to say hello and celebrate the anniversary, it's 800-859-0957. But Mike, you were looking at the FCC ruling that just came out about broadband. And as I saw it, it said that broadband now means you've got to have at least 25 megabits per second download. Am I right on that, or did you?
Yeah, and three upload.
Three upload.
Yeah, right. So the new rules, it ties in with the new net neutrality regulations that will be coming out on February 26th. Mm-hmm. And the idea of net neutrality is that you won't be able to charge different fares for different players on the internet. For instance, Netflix wanting to deliver all their movies, some of these bigger players want to charge them more money because at night 20-30% of the internet traffic is Netflix, and so they're trying to make that difficult. Well, you can't do that where everyone pays the same fee, gets the same service.
So by raising the bar for everybody, we might get enough bandwidth that it won't matter anymore, and everybody can have really fast internet instead of charging just, you know, the big players
right.
and giving them all the bandwidth. So it's actually probably a pretty good move. Right?
How does this tie in with the net neutrality ambition?
Well, neutrality becomes less of an issue if everybody gets enough bandwidth.
Yeah, so
it's only when we have rationing of bandwidth and
right.
somebody has to pay more in order to get really high bandwidth and uninterrupted bandwidth.
And some of the commissioners would like to see it go as high as 100 megabits per second, which is you know, internet 2 speeds.
Well, in South Korea,
right.
That's the regular. That's their regular standard bottom right. line.
Yep. So you'd have a very wide pipe, and so that issue would pretty much go away.
So it sounds like the FCC might fail in actually regulating and prohibiting the throttling of someone else. That what they're trying to do is force the providers to raise the speed, and that way throttling is unnecessary.
Yeah,
that's
right.
what
for
it
everybody.
Sounds like. They're for everyone.
Okay, all boats will rise on that rising tide. Yeah. That's interesting. Okay. Hey, listen, we got a whole bunch of people out there that I want to get to as quickly as we can. And Ben, welcome to the Internet Advisor. How you doing, Ben?
I'm doing fine, and I want to say happy anniversary to you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Ben.
This is our gentleman farmer from the Jackson area. How you doing, buddy?
Adrian,
pardon me. You're, however, on vacation now. The ground is frozen solid, so I know that you're not doing any work there, right?
I'm staying in the house a lot of the time right now.
All right, that's great. And you and Grandma, I know you've written us a couple of emails about your connection. And
oh, he was talking about farm locks. I don't know if we've got an update there.
No, well, we're going to do something in the spring. Ben is testing out. There are two young men out of the Ann Arbor area. Am I right?
Yeah.
They created a program called Farm Logs, and it's supposed to be able to link farmers with this high tech and to help. And Ben is checking that out for us. So I hope this spring, Ben, we'll be able to get you and the guys from Farm Logs on to talk about that.
Okay.
All right. Well, hey, thank you very much for being here with us. Was there something else you wanted to say other than happy anniversary?
Yes. I wanted to make a comment on that fella that about the router and the password and so forth.
Okay, go ahead.
I've got a Linksys. I think he had a D-Link, but I think most routers work very similar. And if he can get on wired, most likely he can get into the wireless section and find out what the password is.
Yep. That's what happened is that he can no longer access that. Now that he's even hardwired, he still can't access it. He went in there originally, modified some security settings. Subsequently, he can't connect wirelessly, so he hardwired it, and he still can't get to it. And I believe he's disabled that capability, possibly, or modified the password. Or
I know with mine, when my grandkids come over sometimes, I'll have to go in and wired and find out what the password is so they can connect. And
yep, absolutely. Yeah, and well, I'm sure he's still listening.
He is. All right. So what was your suggestion again, Ben?
My suggestion was that he try and go in hardwired and try and get into the wireless section and see if he can retrieve that password.
Yep, I got you. All right. And Eddie was saying just simply go back to factory reset and start all over again. And that's another way of doing it.
Yeah, he could do that too.
Yeah, another way of doing it. Hey, Ben, thank you so much for being here and for your well wishes on our anniversary.
Thank you.
Look forward to seeing you in both our email and on the air with us. Ben has been with us many, many years as a listener. We had a lot of interesting conversations with him. He's up into his 80s, but he is up on everything. It's fascinating. Also a steam engine enthusiast.
Yes. And
this time of year, he's looking into a lot of the steam engine stuff.
Him and Jay Leno. Yeah.
That's right. Hey, and Harry's with us from Port Huron. Harry, how are you doing?
Oh, fantastic. Happy anniversary, guys.
Thank you very much. Harry.
Well, a couple things. Yeah. One, the first time that I remember you and Gary being on, I don't know if it was the first show, maybe the second or third, back in 98, like you said, you were doing it at the end of your morning show.
Right.
And the one morning, you had it. There was a kitten in the studio, and it was walking all over your control board.
That's right.
I bet.
We were trying to get it adopted.
Yeah.
Oh, my word.
Yeah, and, you got a great memory.
And it was purring, and Foster's going, get your motor running.
You have a great memory. That is wow.
And you guys have helped, I bet, millions, I bet, over the years. And the first way you helped me years ago was I was looking for a place to store files.
Mm.
And you were the guys that mentioned the thumb drive, the flash drive.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And that has changed a lot of things in my life, and probably a lot of people.
Well, Harry, you are also one of our visually challenged. Are you completely blind?
Absolutely.
And the radio has been the friend of the blind forever and continues to be because it's kind of a voice that helps to serve you in many ways that you can't get otherwise. So I was delighted always to be talking with you. And we've had Ted Lennox.
You betcha.
John.
Whitaker
on with us as well, and many other organizations. Yep. So you represent a very special group of people that we have had the privilege of meeting and talking with. Thank you so much for being there, Harry.
My pleasure, and happy anniversary, and go get them another 17, okay?
Thank you, Harry.
Wow, okay. Be close to 25. I hope I'm still around for that, all right? Hey, Paul from Houston, I bet this is another one of our old friends. Paul Sr., how are you doing?
Terrific, wonderful, marvelous.
I heard that you had some good reports down there in Houston.
Yeah, my doctor said, you know, keep doing whatever you're doing. And I said, okay, so I went home and had a beer.
It sounds good.
Paul, your health has improved since you moved from Harbor Beach up in the Thumb area?
Well, since I retired, too.
that was
a lot to do with it.
Yeah, I bet. That was a big part of it.
But I was going to sing the happy anniversary to you guys, but then I found out that some of the laws up there in Michigan transferred down to Texas.
Yeah, they come after you.
Yeah, yes, and down here in Texas, there's a lot of open carry laws, and I really didn't want to push it.
Boy, I'm glad you're thinking.
When I was back up in Michigan, my aunt has her radio in the bedroom in the computer room on WJR.
There you go. And this is the... There's a neat thing. Now, are you listening to us over the internet right now?
Yes, I am, because you were one of the first shows on WJR that went online.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
We were.
They were supposed to come out on like Monday or Tuesday for WJR, but on your program earlier, you guys came out with it.
That's right.
We were talking about the transition from terrestrial radio, where 50,000 watts commanded the airwaves, now to a brand new world with the internet, where people are, radio stations are able to get on the internet, like you're listening to us right now over the internet. And there's an application on if you go to WJR.com, there's an application you can download that will get you there. And then iHeartRadio, and what are some of the other ones, Mike? There's, oh my goodness, there's a whole bunch of them out there.
There's a whole lot of them out there.
Yeah, there's a whole lot of radios.
To my mic on there. So.
Yeah, there's a whole bunch of applications that you can put on your phone or on your computer and find us. What's the temperature right down there right now in Houston?
Well, it's a bit of a cold snap. We're about 54.
Ooh, that is a cold snap down there.
Not as cold as up here, and you're not going to get 6 inches tomorrow.
So.
Not unless it's rain. Yeah. I would much rather rake leaves in January and February than shovel snow.
Paul Sr., thanks for being with us. Good to talk to you again. Thanks again to Rich Lozinski and Eric Dorsch, who have been working behind the glass for us here, answering phones, and Rich, of course, running our engineering. Gary Baker, thank you very much for 17 years of working together here. It's been a delight.
It has been, and if they'll allow us, we'll do a few more.
And we'll have to post Lauren's ukulele lesson on our site.
We'll do that, along with the photo of her back in 1998.
Oh, yes, we'll get that up as well. By the way, folks, we have a Facebook page, and we'll be posting that on our Facebook page. So please go over there and see all the fun things we do there. Mike Brennan, thank you for joining us here in studio.
Well, it's fun being in the studio for a change.
Yes, exactly. You see kind of the magic.
You get free cake.
Yeah, oh, free cake.
Right.
Yeah,
wonderful cake, our anniversary cake. Thank you, Gary, for that. And Eddie Rudell, thank you very much for being here. Now, folks, before we wrap up, I want to go back. We have a couple calls here I want to get to before we talk about one more thing before we leave this program behind in history and head into our 18th year. So let's go to Rick, who is with us in Redford. Rick, how can we help you here on the Internet Advisor?
Yes, I have Windows 8, and I'm trying to upgrade to Windows 8.1 and download it from the Windows Store. But I can't download it because I have dial-up. It takes forever to download it. And then I bought this hotspot device with 2 gigabytes on it. It took 2 gigabytes to only download 10% of the Windows 8.1. So is there any way that I could get 8.1 if I have to go to Microsoft and buy the software?
You shouldn't have to buy anything if you already have Windows 8 on there, Eddie.
Well, yeah, and it shouldn't be that much. I mean, it is a service pack. I thought it was less than half a gig.
No, it's like about 3.5 or a little bit over. 3.5.
How did you...
He said he went to the Microsoft store.
Well, no, if you have a Windows 8 machine, you should be... You go into the charms.
Yep.
Okay. And then when you go into the charms, you go to PC settings, which is the bottom one on the right-hand side. That takes you to a screen that has a bunch of things from update all the way down there. Mm-hmm. Go to update. In update, it should give you, you should be able to click on, when it says updates that are available, the update to Windows 8.1 should be one of them that's in there.
Yeah. Right.
And you should be able to simply click that, and that'll take you there.
And it's a smart download. So even if you get kicked off, when you reconnect, it'll start up where it left off.
Right. And the thing is that he's chewed up all of his wireless access on his mobile hotspot, and so he wants to know if he can go out and buy it somewhere. You could do is you could go, is it a laptop or a desktop?
It's a desktop.
See, and I don't know if you can actually download that to a flash drive and install it. I'll have to look at that.
I would take your desktop and go into a McDonald's.
I was thinking about that.
Yeah. Any place that has a
hotspot.
Or Starbucks, any place
but
like that.
But it's a desktop.
Are you a Comcast customer?
No.
Oh, okay. Because they have Xfinity hotspots that you can get into anywhere.
Right. So any place where they have a hotspot, and just set up and tell them what you're doing, and they'll probably laugh and let you do it, and you'll get 8.1.
I don't think they're going to let them set up a whole desktop.
Great idea.
Yeah,
I'm sorry.
Or a family member, but you know.
But again,
it's worth a try.
Yeah, the key is when you do this, Rick, go again through your programs, go into the PC settings and into update. And under the updates, just check off the one that has the upgrade to Windows 8.1 because it's in there and
Check that at home first. And if that doesn't work, then find a hotspot close by and buy a cup of coffee and wait for it to
You know what? And Microsoft does make an offline. It took me a few moments to find it. But Microsoft, I think they make an offline version of that. That's the key term.
They used to for the 8. But do they do for the 8.1.2?
That's what I'm finding out. But the key term, if you want to search for it, is search for the key term. I usually use Bing because it's a Microsoft product.
Right.
So search for Windows 8.1 or 8.1 upgrade or update offline.
There
if you use that term offline.
Windows 8.1 update offline.
Right.
That's the key.
And like for corporations, if I was a corporation and I wanted to roll out a Windows 8.1 to 1,000 employees, that has to be a single executable that I want to throw on a server to push to all my laptops.
Right.
I'm not going to force them to go to Microsoft's website. They have to provide an offline update somewhere. You know?
Okay.
I just haven't found it for you this quick. So if you use that key term, you should be able to find that.
Okay, Rick?
Okay, thank you.
That's it. And by the way, if you have any other questions, simply go to internetadvisor.net and send us an email through the Contact Us form. Okay, I want to get to Diana from Belleville before we wrap up our program. Diana, thank you for joining us here on our anniversary program. How can we help you?
Hello. I have a 2009 Toshiba satellite laptop.
Okay.
And all of a sudden, when I try to connect to a wireless network in my home, sometimes it takes forever and it loses it. Now, I have two laptops. My other laptop is an Acer, and it doesn't do that.
Yep.
Is the adapter getting tired, or I don't know what's
going on? No, it's probably the wireless router is getting tired. When's the last time you've lost power or disconnected your wireless router? This happens to me with this used to happen to me quite a bit with an older Linksys router that I had, and it would forget how to allow one device or two devices to wirelessly connect to it. And my kids would go, "Dad, can you go downstairs and unplug the wireless router?" And as soon as I would do that, their wireless device or their phone or their computer would start working. Have you tried resetting your wireless router?
Yes, I've done that, and it happens. I know it happens in different places, so
Okay, so when you reset your wireless router, does your Toshiba allow you to connect again?
Eventually, but I mean it's like fits. It says it's connecting, then it's not connecting, then it's connecting.
How old is your router?
The router was brand new.
Okay.
Comcast made me switch it out.
Okay, so that may not be it. So do wireless devices get tired? No.
In the laptop. I mean, I don't... I don't know how they work.
It could be failing. I mean, how, it's a 2009, you said. It's only 6 or 7 years old. It should not be doing that. Have you tried in safe mode? Are you running a Windows 7 on there?
Yes, it's Windows 7.
Windows 7 allows you to connect. If you power up your computer, tap the Function 8 or F8 key at 1 second intervals after a power up, you'll have the ability to connect your computer wirelessly, safe mode with networking. When you do that, you should still allow you to connect wirelessly to your router. That way you're foregoing a whole bunch of additional software and possible viruses and malware, and just to see if it connects in a safe mode environment. And if it works consistently, then there's something else going wrong. Bad piece of software, malicious software, virus, something along those lines. Also, laptops also have an on-off switch for them for the wireless.
Oh, yes.
But I'm not sure if that's, you know...
What was your laptop model?
It's a satellite.
It's a Toshiba satellite. Have you ever turned on and off your wireless router? Have you ever turned on and off your wireless antenna on your laptop?
I haven't done it in a long time.
Okay. Do you recall if it's a switch, a toggle, a button?
It's a little slide switch.
Ah.
Yeah. Try oxidation on that slide switch. Try flipping that back and forth several times.
Okay.
Because it may have shorted out. Very good catch on that. There were some models that had external switches for the Wi-Fi. That's gone pretty much.
Yeah.
I don't know of any one that I recently. But if you do slide it back and forth, there may be oxidation on that. Great catch, Eddie. Thank you very much for calling, Diana. And we have to run off now. But if you have any more questions, simply go to internetadvisor.net. Guys, thank you so much, Eddie, for being here. And Gary,
yep,
17
it was
years?
Wonderful. 17 years. Let's do some more.
Got an email from Jack Brien, who is thanking us for being on for these years. And Jack, thank you so much for your kind words. Mike, thank you so much for being here, Mike Brennan.
Happy 17.
You get to see the craziness that is this show when it's live.
It is, yes.
Eddie Rudell, thank you so much for being on, and you get your chance to help people here. And now, we are going to again tell you to call to go to internetadvisor.net, and there you'll be able to find, starting on Sunday night, the podcast of this show, or you can subscribe to us now on iTunes. Go to iTunes and look for Internet Advisor Podcast, and you can get that delivered to you on a regular basis.
Oh, and don't forget about Shane Hamlin's Ice Plunge.
Oh, Shane Hamlin is going to be plunging into the Detroit River.
Check out our homepage for more information.
You've been listening to a podcast of the Internet Advisor Show, the longest-running, locally-produced computer show in Detroit radio. If you'd like to find out more about our weekly show, ask a question of our experts, or find the show notes for this podcast, visit internetadvisor.net. And you'll also find us on Facebook. Thanks for listening.